Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl, and I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together, this is...
Me! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hey, Dad, how you doing?
Hello there, Tater. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. It is a beautiful spring day. I think really the first truly nicely temperatured and sunny day we've had in New York this spring. So I'm very happy about that.
Well, good, good. You deserve good weather.
Yeah.
Been waiting long enough.
It's been here and there, but it's nice to have a day where like you wake up and it's warm. It's not like you wake up and it's like 50 and you're cold, but then it slowly warms up. Like I slept with my windows open last night and it was 65 degrees when I got out of bed. It was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It looks like it's finally going to be consistently, you know, moderate weather here, you know, not just 60s and low 70s and no worse than 50 at night. So.
Love that.
We're finally getting into it. It's finally moderating.
Yeah. Is that eclipse? It just, you know, that's what the sun was threatened. Like, hey, do your job or we're going to black you out with the moon.
That's right. We're going to block you.
That's what got ship shape, son.
We're going to rub you out. Everybody's celebrating that you're going away.
Did you do anything celebratory for the eclipse?
I did not do anything celebratory.
No.
The rest of our family did that's here, but I didn't participate. I worked for a living. So.
Oh, okay. That's true. I guess it was in the middle of the day.
Yeah. It was just Monday.
Yeah. That's true.
How about you? Did you have any solar eclipse celebrations?
No, you know, I was actually off on the day of the solar eclipse, but, I felt like it was good, like good vibes to like clean my apartment in line with the solar eclipse. Mm-hmm. And I was just cleaning all day. So at some point I looked outside and all of my neighbors were on their roof, like on both sides of the street. There were just people outside. I didn't get the glasses though. So you can't look at it if you don't have the silly little glasses. So,
well, that's true. I did have a guy at work that would go out every few minutes and take one of those live pictures of it, you know, that moves a little bit
on his phone.
And he was holding a set of glasses up in front of the lens of his camera.
Does that work?
I guess. I don't know. We didn't go blind looking at it. I don't know. I didn't know if it was necessary, but I wasn't going to tell him not to.
Sure. Yeah.
Burn his camera out and he didn't do it. And they'd say, well, why'd you tell me that?
Well, that's good. Yeah. So
we looked at it kind of like a time lapse thing as it happened with his pictures every few minutes.
Yeah, I looked at some pictures. I had some people sending me pictures, so that was good. I don't know. It was strange to see like the light, because we weren't in the totality. So we in New York, it was like, I don't know, like 80% coverage or something.
Yeah, so. We had like 93 or 94. So
yeah.
It did get kind of a weird color, but it never got dark.
You know,
it, like everything got either gray or brown or something like that. It's kind of hard to describe. It was just strange looking.
Well, it looked like here in New York, it looked like cloud coverage, but then there was still sun. Like you could still see the sun shadows. It was just like everything was a shade darker. I don't know.
The moon was a cloud.
Yeah. Now there were lots of eclipse parties. I'm sure there were lots of, I saw some eclipse cocktails going around my feed on various social media platforms, but I didn't have one myself. I don't know. Did you drink anything good this week outside of the eclipse?
Well, actually, I did. We were at the liquor store grabbing a couple things, and guess what I found there?
Berenger.
That is it.
I was trying to think of what I think would be there. All right.
Yeah. I never had it and I'd never seen it. And I, you know, and as many of them as it was, cause there was like two rows of them in the liquors on the shelf lined up there. So that tells me it's not like they just get a couple bottles and stick them up there and hope somebody buys them. They must have a pretty good market for them. So I got a bottle of that Baron Jaeger, and Mom was immediately looked up, what can I make? And she found the Bee Sting.
Is that like a bee's knees with Baron Jaeger?
Well, it's kind of, it's more like a margarita.
Okay.
It's with tequila and that Baron Jaeger, and you know, you salt the rim and lime juice. And I'm not sure what else. I don't think you put triple sec in. But anyway, she made that. She liked it pretty well. I wasn't much of a fan of it, but I took one of my little tasting glasses that I got from that Watershed distillery and put a couple of small pieces of ice down in it and poured me about a half a glass of that, of the just the Baron Jaeger straight, and sipped on it. Man, it's just as smooth as could be. Mm-hmm. And Mom kept saying, now that's a honey bourbon. No, there's no, it's not bourbon. It's a honey it's liqueur. Honey. And she said, and Jägermeister makes it? No, Jägermeister has nothing to do with it. They're just
clearly you
German.
Don't listen to our podcast, Mom.
Yeah, and the word Jaeger is in there. Yeah. One means bear hunter, the other means master hunter.
Yeah.
But see, I enjoyed it. It's really good. I wouldn't mind sitting around just sipping on that. That's good stuff.
It makes sense that there's a lot in Huntington, though. And that's kind of what I thought, like with the association of like frats. I mean, you have a college there. So I feel like that is one of those things that gets stocked for you know, alongside Jägermeister, but
it was right in the same vicinity there with it. And probably people would say, oh, look, here's another flavor of Jägermeister.
Right? Oh, it's honey Jägermeister, which is how I was told, introduced to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. That's so funny. I literally just earlier this week, I bought myself another bottle of Baron Jaeger. Cause I had so many of those. I was making rye, like 2 3/4 3/4 rye, Baron Jaeger and lemon. Sours. Mm-hmm. Sours. I guess that's technically a
so you were using that for the simple.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I was doing those and I like that. But
I'm gonna have to try that.
Yeah, I mean I could see it working in tequila. I think it works really well with like or bourbon. I could see bourbon because you like things a little sweeter and bourbon's a little sweeter. I feel like bourbon, Baron Jaeger, and lemon would work.
Yeah, Mom made some kind of modification to it. I'm not sure what it was, a little more of this or a little less of that. And then it came out better.
Yeah.
Sydney had one too. That they had those for the eclipse party. So they had some cocktails for it. I was working.
Well.
What about you? You have anything?
This week. I for once, I always feel like I'm missing part of my what I'm supposed to do as bar manager, program director in New York City. I'm supposed to go to other bars and see what they're doing. But I'm such a homebody. Like I just, every night I get off, I just want to come home. I want to come home and buy my sandwich on the way and sit on the couch with my cat. So I don't want to go anywhere else.
But you got to keep up with the competition.
Well, I had like, it was a night where the trains weren't running like past a certain stop. So I already knew I had to walk like a half an hour from work just to get to the train. And I was walking right by this really nice cocktail bar called Mace. That's in the city. And I went there once like years ago. I think around the time it first opened, but I hadn't been back since. I thought, you know what? Like, I don't want to have some crazy night, but I would love to just go in and get like one, maybe two like really nice cocktails. Mm-hmm. Midway on this crappy 30-minute walk I have to do before I can even get on the train and go home.
Yeah.
So I did stop in there and I had two excellent drinks. They have a very, I don't know how they design their menus. It's all based around like botanicals and herbs and spices. There's a lot of I don't know. I always think of it as like a cookie menu, like cooking, like a lot of like work goes into each drink. They had a lot of like milk punches. So a lot of like clarified punch bases to build a drink. Mm-hmm. I had one that was called a pandan and it had pandan in it. It was like a very like bright herbal refreshing drink. I had their signature cocktail, which is called a mace and it has like beetroot and Aperol. Mm-hmm. They were wild. They all taste just super vegetal, super rich, super earthy. I don't know, it's not if you're in New York, I feel like people ask us all the time for good recommendations for cocktail bars and I recite the same like five, but this is one that I would add to the list. Like And really, for as complicated as the drinks are, super fast service. Like, they do a lot of pre-batching, a lot of, like, you know, pre-making stuff, so it comes out real fast, which is nice. I like that.
Yeah.
So that's
if you're going to have complicated drinks, you don't want to sit there and wait 20 minutes while they make one.
I mean, some places insist on that, and I have a certain amount of respect for that. If you staff and seat your bar properly, I think that's okay, you know, to have like people know what they're getting into. They know they're watching you make their drink, and it might take 15 minutes. But if you're going to have 80 people in your bar, like seating for 80 people, then you need to be able to effectively make drinks for 80 people. And that means that you either shortcut or you plan your shortcuts.
Well, good.
Yeah, it's a good place. Beautiful. They have food too. Apparently the food's very good, but I've only ever had drinks there, and the drinks are always 10 out of 10.
Well, you can't beat that unless you're going to get an 11 out of 10.
Yeah. But you know, one drink that I had today, it was actually, I did my research for this episode early, and then as I was doing it, I was very thirsty. Cause it just sounded so good when I was researching it, is a very timely beverage for the season. And that is, well, I want to talk about two things. I want to talk about Pimm's, number one, Pimm's Liqueur. And I also want to talk about the namesake cocktail that it's in, which is the Pimm's Cup, which is quintessential summer drinking.
Yeah. It's not something that you win the Pimm's Cup. It's a drink.
I mean, you could win a Pimm's Cup, I guess. Depends on what competition you're in. That would be a better prize
than a drinking than competition.
That's a better prize than most trophies, I think, because you could do something with this. Just go on your shelf. Yeah. It's a very, I don't know how we haven't talked about, how we haven't done the Pimm's Cup before, because it feels like, you know, it's one of those bartending 101 drinks. You get it, you learn it fast, but.
Well, I've heard of it. I mean, I maybe it's been mentioned in conjunction with something that we've talked about. So I've heard of it, but I had no knowledge of what it was. So I felt like we must not have done it, because surely I wouldn't have forgotten everything.
Well, I don't know. I would say, well, not both of us forgetting everything, but you know what? These days, maybe. So, hey, if this is a fresh, if we are redoing an episode that we did before that we've both completely forgotten about, maybe, possibly. Anyway.
You can compare them and see if we're lying.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with a Pimm's Cup, it's a combination of a Pimm's number one liqueur, and then some sort of, you know, the recipe will always say lemonade, but by that they mean like British lemonade, which is more in like American terms, like a lemon lime soda. It's effervescent, and it's not like the closest things that we usually sub in for it would be like Sprite or 7-Up. It is a little bit tangier than that, from what I understand, but as it's Pimm's, the sparkling lemonade soda, and then some sort of fruit, vegetable, citrus, mint, all just a bunch of stuff. Strawberries, cucumber, orange slices. That's all kind of standard stuff
or
to go
all with of the above.
Yeah, usually more the better.
It's almost you know, yeah, you get your celery stick and a Bloody Mary. This is like the whole damn gardens in your drink.
And it is the, I wouldn't
bring
say
a fork to it,
the fruit version of the Bloody Mary garnish, because vegetables can go in a Pimm's Cup, but it's a little bit sweeter.
Yeah.
And of course it gets its name. The Pimm's Cup gets its name from the Pimm's liqueur that's in the Pimm's Cup.
And that seems to be the only thing that's consistent in it, because there's a lot of variations on it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, you can change that. There should be something sparkling in it, but that sparkling element can be all over the place. You can do Prosecco. You can do ginger ale. You can do
ginger,
some people
beer,
do. Yeah.
Tonic water.
Yeah. The fruit can obviously change. Some people do peaches,
champagne,
pears. Yeah. You know, strawberries, yes, mint, basil, kind of whatever you got. Just throw the kitchen sink at it.
Yeah.
But of course, the origin story for the Pimm's Cup starts with the origin of Pimm's liqueur itself. And for that, we actually have to go all the way back to the Victorians. So sometime around, oh, I don't know, 150, 200 odd years ago, you know, starting around the 1820s, the Victorians started making something called a fruit cup. And this is not what you think of when you think a fruit cup, as in something that your mother might have packed you in your lunch when you were a child.
Yeah, a little plastic thing with the peel off plastic top.
No,
and
not,
you eat
not
that.
That. Yeah. Now, this was a liqueur. It was usually gin, didn't have to be, but it would be gin that was mixed with and proofed down with botanicals, fruits, herbs, and spices. So, you know, you would add a bunch of stuff to it. And this was just something you'd make at home. Everybody would have their own recipe. And it was a way of sort of making your gin a little bit more refreshing for the hot summer months. So you'd, you know, have your homemade fruit cup, your gin packed with a bunch of stuff, and you'd pour it over ice and top it with something to stretch it out, lemonade, whatever. And that would be your beverage.
But English love their gin. They always have most everything they do starts with gin.
Absolutely. Yeah. And gin was the quintessential spirit for this. But it was all at home. It was all homemade until James Pym comes along. Now, James Pym was the son of a farmer from Kent. He moved to London in his early 20s, and he first was a fishmonger, and then he eventually evolved into a restaurateur. He opened an oyster bar called Pym's Oyster House in 1823, and sometime around that point, he devised and started serving a liqueur, which he kind of invented as a tonic and digestive, also as something that was meant to accompany the flavors of the oysters he served. So he invented Pym's number one, and it was just this, you know, digestive herbal infused gin in style of the Victorian fashion.
Yes, and like many of our drinks before that, it supposedly had medicinal value. So, you know, it's not just for enjoyment.
Of course. Well, you know, what's interesting about James Pym, before he moved to London and got into the restaurant business, he actually studied theology. That's his background. And this is proven, but I'm going to say, from what we know about monks and their love of making secret, some supposedly medicinal liquors that become wildly popular boozes, I think he at least picked something up from his theology studies. Yeah.
That's where his combination is of herbs and everything recipe exactly. Probably came from, that he mixed in the gin before he proofed it down.
He studied enough to figure out, you know what, I gotta make a secret recipe, put in some alcohol, and I got a business, baby. Thank you, Jesus.
Well, and he also had the thinking, I don't want it as strong as gin. I want to proof it down because I want it to be a drink people can drink all day long.
Yeah.
Because you know what? If you're selling them, that means you get to sell more of them. So that's pretty good thinking, huh?
Absolutely. Well, it was a hit. He, you know, the name, the Pym's number one, comes very simply from just it was his first recipe. That's what he labeled it. The Pym's number one cup was literally just from the tankard that he served it in. It was a cup. So it got that name, Pym's number one cup. And he just made it on premise and sold it on premise for a while until like the demand from other bars in the neighborhood asking him like, hey, can we have this? Can we sell this? People want this. It was big enough that he, you know, established a distillery and got into commercial distribution by 1851. And they added several other varieties of Pym's sort of came along to the portfolio over the next several decades. Now it's worth noting that the original Pym's, James Pym's, he left the business behind. He sold out not long after the success of his oyster bar. He sold rights to his name. He sold the rights to his distillery. He was just sitting back and collecting checks for a while, and Pym's, the brand, continued to expand and operate after him.
Well, and he franchised out a bunch of those oyster houses too.
Yeah.
So there was a bunch of those. One of the first chains there before McDonald's.
Yeah. They were by 1887, there were five Pym's oyster houses, none of which he actually had a hand in, but that was the brand at that point had been established.
He'd been paid for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he was sitting back and making lots of money off of his good work. And there was, they, you know, they started with obviously Pym's number one was the original one. That was the gin base, but then they also made Pym's number two. And most of these came about in like that first couple decades of operation. Number two was Scotch whiskey that was phased out by the 70s. Pym's number three was made with brandy that was also phased out around the 70s, but it did come back in 2004 as Pym's Winter Cup. So that, I believe, is still, you can find it. There was a PIMS number 4 made of rum. There was a PIMS number 5 made with rye whiskey. And that one specifically was designed for the Canadian marketplace. You know, Canada loves their rye. Number 6 was a vodka one. And the vodka one is one that's kind of come in and out of favor. It was discontinued for a while. Then people demanded for it to be brought back. Then it disappeared again. I think as recently as 2021, they discontinued it again. But most of those, there's also supposedly a number 7 that was at least like R&D that was based in tequila, but it's never made it to market.
No, and it was aimed at the American market too, because that was when tequila was first starting to really take off in America.
Tequila did not sell it as well at the time in Europe.
No, it didn't. It didn't work as well.
Yeah, but that 4 through the arguable 7 were all more or less phased out. It's just that number 3 that sticks around, and of course the original number 1.
And that number 3 is one of the reasons it stuck around is they kind of made that almost like a winter drink or a Christmas drink, where they'll put like a warm apple cider or something like that as instead of the lemonade that they would put in there with it. And of course it's a brandy base on that one instead of gin. So that is kind of what you think of when you think of a warm sitting around the fire on a winter's night type drink.
I mean, it sounds great, honestly. Like I would love to try the winter PIMS, because it sounds like something I'd love. And it's worth noting that they have done some special things. Like, while they might not have a consistent vodka PIMS on the market, they have done like special like elderflower, blackberry PIMS, just sort of seasonal things. So they're still playing around with that element of the brand. But by and large, PIMS number 1 is what, when people say PIMS, they mean PIMS number 1. Is that gin-based recipe. And you know, it had a lot of success. There was, famously, a PIMS bar opened at the tennis tournament Wimbledon, starting in, 1972. And they have sold some 80,000 PIMS cups at Wimbledon.
A year.
It's the official it's one of the two official beverages of Wimbledon. The other one, of course, being champagne. But is also the official cocktail of the Chelsea Flowers Show, the Henley Royal Regatta, the Glyndebourne Festival Opera. It's deeply entrenched in British culture for sure. It's one of those go-to quintessential drinks you drink just as much as, what's funny to say, we here in America drink our margaritas, which is not an American drink. It's a Mexican drink, but you know, summer means you're drinking margaritas. If you're in London, summer means you're drinking a PIMS cup.
It's also the preferred cocktail at British and American polo matches.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You know, part of what made me think of this episode was I was watching somebody do a countdown of like the lesser known, like best things to eat and drink at Disney World. And somebody brought up that there's a really good PIMS cup. But what's that? It's the British recipe, your restaurant you really like.
I like Rose and Thorn.
Rose and Crown.
Rose and Crown.
Rose and Crown, is that it? It's the one where you get your...
Yeah, where I get my Guinness 2 at a time.
Yeah, that one. They're saying they have a really good PIMS cup. But,
we'll have to get one the next time we're there. Because I wouldn't have known to ask for it before.
Well, apparently it's there. But yeah, and you know, like a lot of spirits, a lot of specialty spirits in general, even though they hit it big with Wimbledon in the 70s, the market as a whole was taking a hit. The alcohol market as a whole was taking a hit in the 70s. And PIMS sort of had a decline up until the 2000s, when sort of a combination of them having a sort of a new catchy ad campaign, but more importantly, the cocktail revival really brought PIMS back. Mm-hmm. Certainly to the American market, and then sort of just making it a necessity at a cocktail bar really reinvigorated the brand, because that's one of the first, you know, that's one of those cocktails that you're expected to know how to make. If you have a bottle of PIMS on the back bar, and it's not a hard cocktail to make, it's literally a one-in-one with some bells and whistles, but you should know how to make it, and a well-stocked bar should be able to make it. So PIMS has had a revival in the last 20 years or so.
Yeah, it's the shitty cocktail period that I grew up in is what did away with it. Nobody was making good cocktails. They just were mixing everything with Coke or whatever.
Which is funny.
Coca-Cola, not cocaine.
Well, I guess having the 80s. A lot of sugared rims in the 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because the Pimm's Cup almost could have survived because it's not a shaken cocktail. It's literally just you put some Pimm's, you can build it in a glass if you're in a hurry. You put some fruit in there, you can muddle it down, throw your Pimm's in, you know, 1 to 3 is your proportion, top it off with whatever. You've got Sprite on the gun. Great.
But I could bet you that in 99% of the towns that had bars, they didn't even do a Pimm's cup. It wasn't
Oh, for
like
sure. Absolutely.
that was an option that people didn't order. It was
No.
they wouldn't even consider putting it on there, you know?
No. Well, and it's, you know, as big as it was and is in Europe, in America, the Pimm's Cup kind of had its moment in, you know, starting around the 20s is really when it started being imported heavily into America. And it really hit its stride in the 40s. Specifically in New Orleans. New Orleans is kind of the holdover spot where the Pimm's Cup never went away in America. And that's because they started selling it at a place called the Napoleon Bar in the French Quarter in the 1940s. And it was a hit. It became just kind of a quintessential drink of that bar. And it's sort of similar to James Pimm's reasoning, the operator of the Napoleon Bar. His reasoning was, hey, it's really hot here. I want to serve people something refreshing. I also want them to get so shit-faced that they won't buy more than one drink, so I want a lower alcohol cocktail on the menu. And that's why he chose to put the Pimm Cup on his menu, because it's refreshing, it's hydrating, it's very low alcohol. Pimm's is like 25%. So, and that's the only liquor you have in that drink, really. So it's a very low ABV cocktail that's very refreshing, hydrates you, gets you some sugar, perfect to counteract the depravity of most New Orleans drinking.
Yeah, because the other biggest option is a hurricane, and a hurricane will put you on your ass real fast.
Yeah, or a Vucaray, which is going to do the same. No,
Maybe a
it's true.
Sazerac, but even
No.
that, those are pretty
Exactly. Well,
potent
yeah,
too.
it's all liquor, straight liquor. Yeah, so that's why, and that's even like the Pimm's Cup became one of those go-to New Orleans cocktails, despite originating very far from New Orleans. And that kind of stayed through the course of the dark days of cocktailing. And even to the point that, like, you know, I was reading some articles of people that were originally told, like, no, Nola invented the Pimm's Cup. This is an invention of New Orleans. Like, that was a commonly held belief before we had, you know, the internet. But
Well, people didn't know any better. It's the only place they've seen it. As a matter of fact, when I was thinking about it, when you were saying that, I think that's why I've heard of a Pimm's Cup before, because
yeah.
I knew I'd heard of it. I didn't know what it was, but I knew I'd heard of it. And I think that's why, because from the trips we've made to New Orleans in the past.
No, it's a standard drink down there. I mean, now it's a standard. I would say most cocktail bars now, you can walk in and expect to see a bottle of Pimm's on the back bar. But yeah, you know, and maybe not even Pimm's, because that's the thing. You know, to go back to the or origin of Pimm's. That Victorian fruit cup, which didn't ha it was it could be anything. Lots of gin brands have now gotten into the game of making their own fruit cup. You've got Plymouth Gin makes a fruit cup, just called Plymouth Fruit Cup. Sipsmith has what they call their London Cup. Heyman's, I love Heyman's Gin. It's one of my favorite. They have a really good Old Tom, but Heyman's has a rose and peach cup that they do in the style of a fruit cup. So now you have all these brands. I mean, you do also have a lot of British brands that are specifically meant to mimic Pimm's. That's like, you know, like the Aldi's brand of Pimm's Cup, like the kind of discount brand. But you also have these sort of luxury brand gins that are getting into the fruit cup market to try to make their own thing that's designed to just be cut with, you know, cut with some ginger ale or some soda or some tonic. So it is it, it's just as much as the drink is not so much a recipe as an idea, even the spirit itself is more of an idea than a specific component.
Yeah, build a suit, you know. It's not like it's only one way, but this is why I said bring a fork on this one that has the recipe here for it. Now, not counting the alcohol in the liquid, but on the garnishment it says one navel orange. That's a whole orange cut crosswise into thin slices, one lemon cut crosswise into thin slices, 3/4 cup firmly packed mint leaves and tender stems, one cucumber cut lengthwise into 8 wedges, 3 cups of ice, one apple quartered, cored, and cut into thin slices. Now, that's a lot of fruits and vegetables. There's a cold cucumber in it.
How much is the drink proportion of that, though?
1.5 ounces of Pimm's number one and 4.5 ounces of sparkling lemon soda.
There's no way there's all that fruit for that. That doesn't fit.
Well, that's what I thought. I thought they must have made it a pitcher.
No, that's got to be a pitcher. I think somebody put, maybe that's 1.5 bottles of Pimm's.
You'd have to have this giant glass just to fit all the fruits and vegetables in.
Yeah, I made one for myself before this episode, and I cut up like, I don't know, like 4 or 5 pieces of cucumber, like 2 strawberries, a few slices of orange. And I was like, this is just too much in the glass for me.
Well, maybe it's just saying that you should prepare all that so you're ready at the bar to make them or something.
Yeah, you can kind of throw it in a la minute. I do think it's one of those that, like, you know, if you can like almost like a sangria, you put all your fruit in there with your Pimm's and let it start to sort of infuse into it, and then pour that over your bubbles, and then, you know, whatever kind of bubble you got in there, then put a little bit of the fruit in there that's gotten to like loosen up a bit.
Yeah.
I think, well, that's, you know, in America, we tend to make our drinks like single service. If you order a Pimm's cup at the bar, I am going to probably muddle the fruit down and then shake and strain just to get the infusion going.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more common if you order this in the UK, you're going to get something that's in a pitcher. Like, you're going to get a bigger serving of something. That's going to have time to sort of sit and open up more.
But if we were going to drink these like in an afternoon, sitting out around the pool or something like that, I would make a whole pitcher of them and go from there, as opposed to trying to make them one at a time. That's too much work to make them one at a time.
No, I think if you were going to do that, I would honestly say just like either a couple hours beforehand or even the night before, just take your whole bottle of Pimm's, pour it over all of your fruit, you know, and just let that pitcher sit in the fridge overnight, and then the next day pull it out, top it with your lemonade or your ginger ale or whatever, and serve that, because then you're going to get all that nice fruit flavor, that mint flavor, that cucumber flavor to get into that, you know, gin.
Yeah, and also, just whatever falls in your glass, will you fruit wise you use that.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, but just scoop a little in, you know, just put the liquid in and then just add some fruit.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I there could be a British person listening to me say that. I'm like, that's blasphemy. So I don't know, if you're British and there's a right way to do this, tell me. Because that's how it would make sense to me as a bartender. Like, you want those flavors in there. So you either got to muddle them in and shake them in, or let them slowly infuse in. But I don't know.
Yes. Some Englishman is listening to this podcast. He's, bloody hell, they're ruining the Pimm's cup.
Probably.
I must get to America and straighten them out.
That's fine. I mean, I was also, when I was first taught how to make a Pimm's cup, and this is in a bar years and years ago, I was also told to like do it with a little bit of citrus juice, like put some lime juice in there, or lemon juice, put some simple syrup in there, because it's actually not a sweet drink. It might sound like a sweet drink, but really, because you do have this, like, it's a classically a 1-to-3 ratio of Pimm's to whatever your topper is. And I mean, yeah, like pouring something like ginger beer is going to make a drink pretty sweet. Sprite's a little less sweet, but you know, you're putting a sweet thing over, but that's the only
lemonade
sweet you have.
Sweet if you use actual lemonade.
Well, but this is like it's British lemonade. So it's like a tart sparkling lemonade. But you don't have any other sweetener in there. And Pimm's is not sweet. Pimm's is herbal. It's fruity. It's got this really lovely kind of caramelized orangey flavor to it, but it is not sweet. So depending on the proportions you use and depending on what you use to top it, you don't have any additional sweet in there. I was expecting kind of a sweet drink when I first made it for myself. I'm like, oh, it's really not. It's fairly, fairly dry. It's refreshing, but it's fairly dry. So when I was taught how to make it, I was taught to put like 1/2 ounce of simple syrup in there and shake the whole thing and strain it, and just a complete departure from what a proper Pimm's cup, I'm pretty sure, is.
I wonder, it would be interesting for the lemon, the lemonade, the sparkling lemonade or whatever, if you used a lemon chuhai.
Oh, you absolutely could. I think that would work great. Like a real proper, like good fruity, not too sweet one. Yeah. Hey, there you go. I wonder, I'm sure somebody Somebody's got to have done that. If you use like some, especially if you used, I don't know, throw in some sort of other like shiso instead of mint, do like a more Japanese herbs, Japanese fruit profile, do a lemon chuhai. Hey, Dad, you're onto something.
Japanese Pim's cup or something.
Something like that. But it's also worth noting, you know, obviously we're talking both about Pim's number one and the Pim's cup. But if you buy a bottle of Pim's number one, you don't, obviously you're going to mainly use it for Pim's cups, but you can also use it as a modifier in your cocktails. I was looking around and, you know, there's not like a named drink that like a call drink that uses Pim's that isn't the Pim's cup, but that doesn't mean that creative bartenders haven't done some cool shit with Pim's as just an ingredient in a drink. Cause it does bring some nice spice, some nice fruit, some nice rich flavor. I saw some people using it in sort of like a, almost like a Pim's, like amaretto sour. So using Pim's simple syrup and citrus in like a 2 3/4 3/4 build to get sort of a, like an off sweet sour.
I saw also they said there's a Pimlet, which is basically a gimlet, but we just use Pim's number one instead of the gin.
Well, that would be that, yeah.
And there's also a Pim's mojito that substitutes lemon and lime soda with muddled limes and soda water.
Yeah. No, it's a good, like, it's not an ingredient that you can only use for that one thing. You know, I think it goes well with rye because Pim's does have sort of a spiciness to it from the, like the earthy spices in it. So if you pair it with like a rye whiskey as like a split base, you get this whole other layer of flavor. You know, you could try it even like a stirred build as something to sort of add. Oh, I don't know, it's like an old pal, like a Boulevardier play, but like much softer flavor profile. You could have a base spirit and then a little bit of that. So you could, you know, something to play around with. It's a very approachable spirit. It's just a gin that has a bunch of fruit and spice added to it, and then it's proofed down.
By golly, it's not only approachable. I think Pim's is number one.
Well, yeah, unless it's number three, but that's only wintertime. and you can make your own Pim's. That's the other thing, is that, again, that original recipe, that Victorian fruit cup, was something they made in their kitchens and at home. So, I was looking at Difford's Guide, that they have like 12 different recipes for homemade Pim's. It's not really Pim's, it's not name brand Pim's, but bringing in your own fruit and spice profile and infusing it into whatever your chosen base spirit is to make a classic Victorian fruit cup. And then you can just do whatever you want with it. So
yeah,
no real rules here. Just some vague parameters.
Get a glass of Pim's and go visit the salad bar.
Basically. There you go. all right. But there you go. There's maybe your new drink of the summer, you know, get it, start with a bottle of Pim's, follow the classic recipe and just let loose from there.
That's right.
Are you gonna seek one out, Dad? Are you gonna try one?
I'm gonna look around, see if I can find a bottle of Pim's if they've got it here. I haven't seen it, but like I say, it's probably like the Bernier. I'd never look for it. So you don't see things you're not looking for. Just like when you find something, it's always in the last place you look, because why would you keep looking?
That is true. Well, I hope you find some Pim's. I hope you try it out. I just bought a fresh bottle for this episode, so now I'm gonna play around with it. Now I feel like, cause, you know, the bar I work at is an oyster bar, and now I feel like I failed in some way by not having Pim's, at least on the back bar, if not on the menu. I feel like I gotta get a bottle of Pim's in house because we're an oyster bar, and it was literally designed to go with oysters.
Well, there you go. Well, you can, when you update the menu the next time, put that in there.
Well, there's the meat, like there's my obsessive, like, need to satisfy my knowledge. And then there's like everybody else that I work with that doesn't have, I have to give a shit. That's my job, but they don't. So when I come to them, like, we've made a horrible mistake. We're an oyster bar and we don't have Pim's. And they're like, what, has anybody ever asked you for it? No, but we should. Okay. All right. Thank you, Taylor. Thank you. Thanks for the input. Somebody's got to care about this stuff. Yeah.
We'll just play this podcast over the speakers there at the restaurant so that they can understand why they need one.
That'll definitely go over well. all right. Well, thank you all for listening. I hope we have guided you to your new summer cocktail of choice. If you're British, please tell us everything we did wrong, because I'm sure you will anyway.
We're used to it.
Thank you, Dad, for being here.
Well, thank you, Tay, for having me. I always learn something, and I did once again.
All right. If you want to discuss your personal experience with Pimm's, your favorite recipes, your do's and don'ts, you can do that.
Meet the BoozeCast group page on Facebook.
Do that. And if you'd like to support us, we do have a Patreon, and we are always very, very grateful for your contributions. You helped this podcast get made. So thank you for that. I have been Taylor Sparrow.
I've been Tommy Sparrow.
And this has been
me. Personal Pimm's.
That's what life is about.
That's right.
Finding your Pimm's, whatever that is to you.
Life is but a Pimm's cup. You never know what kind of shit might be in it.
Full of vegetables
and fruits.
It's true.